Blonde Bait, No Time to Be Young, Teenage Caveman, and Juvenile Jungle are some of the forgotten B-films of the 50s. It's hard to see these films now, but you can see the posters that advertise them, reproduced as postcards, in Michael Barson's new book, Lost, Lonely, and Vicious. Barson is a popular culture historian who collects not only movie posters, but also comic books from the 40s, hard-boiled detective pulps, rhythm and blues records, and much more. He told me the kinds of films he wanted to have represented in his new book.
Generally, they're referred to as exploitation films. Many of them are teenage exploitation ones, but all of them combine, I guess you'd say they're all B pictures. They all were not headline pictures when they played, and a lot of them played only in drive-ins.
They all come from the period of 1949 to 1961. I think one of the things about that period is that it's the first time that there was really a teen culture.
Yes, that was just then when you started to see Life magazine running all these alarmist articles about the juvenile delinquency problem in the country. And you had star films like Humphrey Bogart's Knock on Any Door about the same problem. But once it made the headlines, the cheap movie makers rushed into production these kinds of films, and they were made often in 5 or 6 days.
What else was special about the period of 1949 to 61, the period from which you've taken the movie posters?
Well, one of the things that appeals to me about all of these kinds of films is that the element of sex that's in them has to be downplayed and dealt with in a very indirect way, something that seems quaint to us now, 30 years later or more. And it's that approach, you know, it's too late for her to say no, and things like this, which really, it's a treatment that we've lost our innocence long since that day when we could deal with things that way indirectly. Now everything is so direct, and it's lost all of its charm, I think.
I have to say, there's nothing that seems innocent about these movies to me. The movie that you just quoted from, Too Late to Say No, is from Teenage Doll.
Yes.
And the blurb on the poster is, too young to be careful, too tough to care, now it's too late to say no. I mean, that's not not an innocent ad, exactly.
Well,
nor is Hot Rod Rumble with its piston-hard drama.
Well, Terry, I don't know what I can say about the way your mind works. To me, these are very, very innocent.
Oh, they're so insinuating. I mean,
yes.
Isn't that what it's all about?
No,
yeah.
Of course they are, yes.
It's like super lurid, almost like to compensate for the fact that there was, there was still the code in the movies.
Oh, there was nothing in these movies,
right.
or in the books or in anything else. It was all sizzle and no steak, and it's really appreciating that sizzle that led me to do this.
Let's talk about some of the different types of movies that you include in Lost, Lonely, and Vicious. There's the prison movies and the girl gang movies. As a matter of fact, we have a clip from the movie Reform School Girl.
Gloria Castillo brings you the dramatic, shocking truth about reform school girls.
Your name's Donna, huh?
That's right.
What's your rap?
Man got killed. Stolen car, and I wouldn't say who did it.
Ross Hunter, a psychologist who tries to help all reform school girls. And Edward Burns, as the kind of a man who is a constant threat to everyone.
I'll figure a way. You better. Man, you better. Or you're fixing to sniff that crazy cyanide.
There's a couple of movies that you have postcards for. There's a Girls in Prison, What Happens to Women Without Men, and Betrayed Women, What Happens Behind the Barrack Walls of the Female Devil's Island. There's always this implicit promise of lesbianism and sadomasochistic sex in the way the ads are written, don't you think?
Oh, yes. And really, I think the whole Girls in Prison thing that is popular with men for that reason. I can't really psychoanalyze the whole culture or even myself, but that's it. However, I saw Girls in Prison, and I can report that there isn't anything like that in the film. So not that they couldn't make a movie with that in it, but it's the innocent period here that I think is funnier.
Let's talk about beatnik movies. We have an excerpt of a trailer here from the film The Beatniks.
These are the beatniks, the defiant young, coming from every walk of life, wrought with suppressed emotions, and mocking the everyday course of modern society, intent on striking back as they wage a battle for their right to be heard.
I love the line that these are the beatniks mocking the everyday course of modern society. That was the big fear that's exploited in these movies, right?
Well, it's that fear that created the headlines for all of these things, you know, kids running wild in the streets. And when you see the Life magazines and the Time magazines' accounts of these things, whether it's beatniks or girls who have to go to reform schools or later the Haight-Ashbury scene in the 60s, it just takes a few years for you to realize, looking back, how ridiculous their account of all that was. But at the time, you know, that's what passes for news.
It must have been great fun to come up with the copy for the posters and for the trailers. Did you ever meet anybody who had the job of writing it?
No, but I want that job. I want to be able to describe Girls on the Loose as trigger tough and ready for anything. I mean, it must have been a blast. Of course, they probably weren't paid anything for thinking up these great lines, but that is really part of the fun with looking at these and enjoying them today.
There were some terrific movies from the 50s that had cameos by rock and roll bands of the time, and some of that footage is really great footage now of people in their prime performing.
Often it's the only good footage we have. You know, although people like Little Richard are still around, many others are not, and that's really the appeal of those. In fact, they're very collectible because many of the great rock stars made their only preserved appearance in some of those movies.
A lot of the movies that you include in Lost, Lonely, and Vicious were B-movies. When they stopped being B-movies, when they stopped basically being double features, did these movies start to die out?
Well, they did, but they're still being made. The difference is that instead of showing up at your local cinema, they're showing up on your home television. You see made-for-TV movies like Katie, Portrait of a Centerfold. These would have been theatrically released movies back in the 40s and 50s, now there's no market for them at $7 a ticket, so they just show up on TV where you watch them for free.
I think one of the projects you're working on now is digging up Red Scare hysteria.
Yes.
Literature.
Yes.
What are you looking for exactly?
Well, everybody knows that there was a period called the McCarthy period in American history where, you know, the whole communist menace thing permeated everything. It had a serious side, but on the other hand, if you can step back a little further and just see how insane the whole thing became, where commies were under every desk in every schoolyard and around every corner, it begins to take on some of the more comic proportions. And I'm gathering together materials like, movie posters, of course, from movies like I Was a Communist for the FBI, and Red Menace, and my favorite, Zsa Zsa Gabor in The Girl in the Kremlin from 1957. And I'm interested in this because you always see the serious side of it, and there was a serious side to it where, you know, the Hollywood 10 were blackballed and people lost their jobs and so forth. But it's just, again, hard to believe that a nation like ours can just lose its marbles.
Are there any connections to be made between the advertising copy for the teen exploitation movies and the kind of copy that was written during the Red Scare period?
Well, it was the exact same thing, really, Terry, because you probably had the same people making the movies, the same actors acting in them, and the same copywriters writing the copy on the posters. It was just one more headline to exploit. You know, you had John Wayne versus the commies in a movie like Big Jim McLean. You had Mike Hammer, the private eye that Mickey Spillane created, going up against commie gangsters in New York City and in One Lonely Night. And those gangsters supposedly were running around New York with Tommy guns trying to take over the United States. I mean, there is an absurd aspect to it where whatever was really there in the way of some kind of communist menace was just blown so out of proportion that it really is funny today, at least to somebody with my warped sense of humor.
Michael, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.